You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, September 30th, the last day of September 2024. Grandpa Dan streaming with you, radioalbion.com. What a way to kick your work week off. I'm glad you're joining us today. As I continue to wait and expect, something's going to break. Something has got to give. You see, you have those people that always say, you know, nothing ever happens. And I've been hearing people say nothing ever happens for years. And my common response to that is nothing ever happens. Nothing ever changes until it does. And when you look back and you really look at how things transpire, oftentimes it's a case of nothing seems to change, nothing ever happens, and then it does, and it does so very, very quickly. When people go broke, when their finances get out of hand, you watch and they will tend to be skating along, somehow treading water just fine. They keep treading along and treading along just fine, and then all of a sudden, they're underwater. They go broke overnight. You see this with companies. You hear stories about companies and they go along, they're treading along, and then all of a sudden you read these news stories like, oh, this well-known company has gone broke, has filed for bankruptcy. You didn't even realize anything was going on. This tends to be the way things work out. Nothing ever happens until it does. And then when it does, they kind of chain reaction off and they happen very, very quickly. One of the things where you're trying to figure out what is going to happen is to look at all of these different things that are going on and say, where is this going to? I recently did a Daily National show, and I likened it to the U.S. has been bluffing for so long. They have no choice, but they're in a pickle now because instead of folding, you're having more and more players at the table who keep calling their bet. At some point in time, one of the other players is going to double down and start raising the bets. In other words, instead of constantly reacting, they're going to get more proactive. You see all of these things going on, and you have to have this feeling that something is about to break. Something is coming. We just don't know what that's going to look like, but things will change, and they're going to change rather quickly. One of the places this is extremely visible is in foreign policy matters. And the backdrop, I've got a story I'm going to use today, and we'll get to it here in a minute, because this is just an aspect of what I wanted to get into today. And that is the fact that when you look at these things, you can lump the domestic stuff in with it, but they're related. You know what I'm saying? They're interrelated. So we look at the foreign policy stuff, and there's all these debates and all these things going on in foreign policy, and there's one common thing. There's one common thread that ties it all together. What are we getting? And that is the question. It is illustrated by the question, what are we getting out of this? Why? Why are we even doing this? Of course, we're not. We have no say in it. We live in the democracy system. But they allege that they represent us, that they have a legitimate right to rule over us. Now, I would argue that they do not, and this is illustrated by their actions. Because once again, they do all this, they make all these decisions, and we say, well, how does that benefit us? What are we getting out of it? Do what we want, the people, we being the people, because there's definitely a line between the government and the decisions they make, and we, the people. More and more it becomes apparent that the opinions of we the people matter not a bit to they that rule over us. There's been this discussion, they're having this debate on whether or not to fire long-range missiles into Russia to, quote-unquote, allow Ukraine to fire these long-range missiles into Russia when Ukraine has no way of doing that. The things are guided by satellite. They have to be operated by specially trained personnel. So to say, oh, well, they're launched from Ukraine. Were they going to have a Ukrainian guy stand there and give the order, fire, while some Brits or Americans sit there and operate the missile systems? Putin has come out and clearly stated, look, we're not going to let you continue to play these word games of, oh, it's not us, it's the Ukrainians. He's like, y'all are firing the weapons, y'all are manning the weapons, y'all are using your satellite and intel to guide the weapons to their targets. The fact that you're technically in Ukraine doing it, we're not going to play that game anymore. Now, granted, Putin has undermined himself by allowing so many red lines to be crossed and playing the patient game. And so now you have this debate about whether to do this, because Putin has said they're not going to play this game. They have followed this up with updating their nuclear doctrine to strike other countries, namely the UK and America, if you get down to it. And yet, there's this debate now going on. And supposedly the US is a bit hesitant in their madness to LARP as being an important empire still. Britain seems to be all gung-ho on this idea and is trying to convince the Americans to go along with it. Oh, it's okay. So it's okay. He's not going to actually do anything. And that is the summary of the debate that's taking place as to firing these missiles into Russia. But nobody says, what do we get out of it? They're having this debate over doing this, and the debate is centered around, would Putin really retaliate? Would he nuke us, for instance? And if he isn't going to nuke us, then what is he going to do? And is it a tolerable level? Now, I don't really think that it's likely that Putin would respond by nuking us. But let's say there's a 5% chance. There's a 5% chance that Russia would respond by nuking a city in America or in Britain. Just a 5% chance. Again, I don't think it's likely, but let's say it's on the table, because this is the gist of the debate over this issue that's going on. And the debate is whether or not he would actually do something, instead of what's the cost-benefit analysis. They never give us a cost-benefit analysis. In the mainstream press, they talk about this debate and whether it'll allow the Ukraine, again, ignoring the fact that the Ukraine can't do it, so it would be the U.S. and Britain doing it, and whether Putin would respond, instead of explaining to us exactly, okay, well, even if he does nothing, what are we getting out of it? Let's say they make this decision, they launch these missiles, and Putin once again blusters and issues a stern warning at the UN or whatever nonsense and lets it go. Okay, so what do we get out of that? Is it going to change the fact that the Ukraine is losing? No, it's not going to change that fact. Is it going to add to the prosperity of a single person in Britain or in America? Is our economy going to be better? Are we going to have more money in our pocket? Are we going to be able to afford things more easily or more readily? Is our standard of living going to somehow get better? No, absolutely not. At the end of the day, it seems to me like they're having a debate on risking nuclear war, even if it's just a 5% chance. Are you willing to do that? Would you be willing to risk your very life over something that there's no benefit to it? There's absolutely no benefit to you, and yet you're going to take a 5% risk that if it goes sideways, you're going to die. If you're a sane person, you're not going to say, well, why would I do that? Even if nothing happens, I'm not getting anything out of it. The thing that seems to be noticeably missing from these discussions in the mainstream press and in these government press releases, I repeat myself because they're the one and the same, is some sort of explanation of why the risk is worth it. They're having this big debate over whether or not Putin would actually react. And instead, I find myself sitting here, as I'm sure many others do, asking, what's in it for us? I mean, if he does nothing, what have we gained? It seems to me they're rolling the dice on an actual hot Third World War. We're already in a Third World War. Just the kinetic energy hasn't reached it to where everybody understands that. But they can't tell us what we're getting out of it. I mean, what do we get? I saw a meme here a while back, and the guy says, World War III, but why? And the guy at the desk says, well, quite frankly, we're out of ideas. And that's really how it strikes me. They don't know what to do. They have no plan. They have no idea. They're not even, honestly, I don't think, very smart. And so it's just like, well, let's roll the dice on World War III. Why not? Maybe he won't do anything. And then we can sit here and say victory or something. We've seen all of these claims that the latest thing is going to turn it around in the Ukraine. When they sent the tanks in, whether they're German tanks or American tanks, first they said they wouldn't, then of course they did. And they said they did it because this was going to turn the tide, and of course it did not. Everything they've said is Patriot missiles, Patriot air defense was going to change the, and it hasn't. It didn't, and it will not. Then there was all this talk about F-16s. F-16s. Well, if we send these F-16s, then it's going to turn the tide of this. And, of course, it has not. But never in the discussion is, what are we getting out of this? What exactly, you know, is making this worth the gamble? It's like, I don't even understand from the get-go what we were supposed to get out of this. It didn't make any sense. And yet, they still will not explain to us. We're doing a sunk cost fallacy, but at least with a sunk cost fallacy, at the beginning, you think you're going to make something out of it. You think there's going to be a profit. From the beginning, they've never explained to us exactly how this is going to make our lives better. We're just continuing to throw good money after bad. Now, aside from Zelensky going around trying to continue to be a celebrity and trying to keep the money flow, the corrupt money flow, money laundering operation going, the Ukraine has kind of moved to the back burner, which is interesting because, again, in the background, they're having this discussion about whether or not to roll the dice on a nuclear war, but still has gone to the back burner. What has moved to the front of the news cycle? Well, I say that it's hardly mentioned really in depth in any sort of way in the mainstream press. Is the Middle East? Is Israel? Is one of those, one of the things that is really striking about this is, once again, the quote unquote anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists have been proven to be right. We keep they going on and on about the U.S. government, I should say, goes on and on about not wanting the conflict to escalate. They threaten everyone in the Middle East but Israel over not escalating, while Israel continues to blatantly escalate. And everybody knows Israel can only do this because they're supported by the U.S. The U.S. could cut them off at any time. If the U.S. said right now today, we are just not sending you any more weapons, money, bombs, nothing. You're on your own. Go ahead. If you want to start a war, you're on your own. And it would stop today. And yet they have the nerve to come out and say, oh, we're really trying to do a ceasefire. We really don't want the conflict to expand. It's like if you went into a really low dive bar with a bad crowd hanging out in it, and you got this one guy who's your quote unquote best buddy, and he keeps firing his gun off at people in the bar, and you're running around threatening everybody in the bar. Don't you dare shoot back. Don't you dare. You don't want to be responsible for killing, do you? You won't be responsible for violence. And yet it's your big buddy over here. But once again, no one can ever tell us. They go on and on about how this is our greatest ally ever and our ironclad support for them. And they can't ever tell us, what are we getting out of it? What are we getting out of this ironclad support for Israel? And why is it? Why is it so ironclad? I've got a story, and I'm using this USSANews.com, and honestly, I have no idea who these people are. I've been reading about this from various sources. Jerusalem Post is one of them. RT is another. I've always liked using RT because of the way they compact the story to where, you know, it kind of gets to the point, and you can roll with it. However, the U.S. government is on a trajectory. They're telegraphing at this stage that as this conflict potentially escalates with the Russians, that if you're citing RT, well, you're citing Russia propaganda. I could see where that could lead you're providing aid and comfort to the enemy thing and causing myself all sorts of headaches. So I am now refraining from using RT as a source. As such, I'm forced to go around and use all these different sources just to get to the same thing that was a nice, compact, easy to use story from RT. Now, it might sound like I'm being extremely paranoid, and you may be right. But again, the latest tirade that the government has gone on against RT, I see they are telegraphing and making it fairly clear that if you're using RT, they're going to claim you're basically working for the Kremlin or something. I don't need those kind of headaches. I'll go ahead and make the effort, the extra effort to use these other sources. Again, it's the story. I consider and use no sources just because I've read it from so many different places and put it all together. And, you know, again, including Israeli media itself. But I found this, and this kind of is a decent summary. Again, I have no idea about this site. It looks like some kind of normie, conservative site. But whatever, it had a decent enough wrap-up. And the headline is, and again, this headline, you can find it in all sorts of American mainstream sources. They just leave out bits and pieces, and this one does as well. And the headline here is Pentagon furious with Israel over Nasrallah strike. And this is from the media. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin was furious with Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant when he learned at the last moment that Israel was about to assassinate Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, the Jerusalem Post has reported. Nasrallah was killed in a massive Israeli airstrike on his underground compound in Beirut on Friday. The IDF claimed that 20 senior Hezbollah officers were killed alongside Nasrallah, while the number of civilian casualties remains unclear. Of course, we know the IDF basically claims everybody they kill is a terrorist. Everybody they kill is an enemy combatant. We've seen this over and over in Gaza. Yet again, all of this is enabled, funded, paid for. Hell, they're U.S. bombs. What are we getting out of it? Why doesn't somebody explain to us why this is worth it? If an outsider didn't understand the way politics in this system works, they would say, well, Israel is a client state. How would they have the nerve to sit here and not tell the controlling state what's going on? Of course, such a person would not understand that this little bitty nation is actually the controlling state and the U.S. is the client state. The U.S. immediately denied any role in the strike. President Joe Biden said that he, quote, had no knowledge that Israel was planning the attack, while Austin told reporters that he had no advance warning and only spoke to Gallant while the operation was actually already underway. Now, again, the U.S. is enabling all this. The U.S. is paying for it. The U.S. is paying for its U.S. weapons, money, bombs, everything that's propping this Israel up. And yet, they're bold enough to not even bother telling the Americans until they're already doing it. And they're not worried about it. This is what strikes you. They're not even worried about it. Anybody who used a term such as ZOG, which stands for Zionist Occupied Government, referring to the government of the United States, in years past would be dismissed. That's an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. I guess they would still accuse you of that being an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. But how can it be so? I mean, you have a situation here where they don't even feel the need to let the Americans have a heads up. They just blow them off and tell them, oh, by the way, we're doing this. They're not asking for permission. They're completely propped up by the Americans, and they're basically completely disrespecting the Americans to their face. Just blowing them off, just doing whatever the hell they want to, and saying, oh, by the way, we're doing this. Citing anonymous sources, the Jerusalem Post claimed on Sunday that Austin was furious at the lack of notice he was given by Gallant. Austin and Gallant have spoken by phone more than 125 times since the start of the Israeli-Hamas war last year, the newspaper stated, adding that the U.S. defense chief essentially lost it with Gallant over the Nasrallah killing and the short notice provided. Note the power dynamic here. He throws a fit, and that's all he can do. It's not like he can threaten him and say, you know what, we're going to cut you off, because everybody involved in this knows that's not going to happen. Why is that so? Why is it that they are so bold? Now, this little reading doesn't include it, but the icing on the cake is after Lloyd Austin is furious and throws a hissy fit at his Israeli counterpart. His Israeli counterpart, Gallant, tells him, now y'all be sure and go out and threaten Iran not to hit us back over this. And the Americans obediently do it. I'm sorry. It's not even debatable who's calling the shots here. I mean, it's out in the open. You read these articles, whether it's from a summary from a site like this, or you go to the Jerusalem Post and you can read the story there. It's out in the open who's on top in this power dynamic, and it ain't the U.S. Again, why is that? Why are they so confident? Quoting here, Nasrallah was a bad guy. This is a quote here. Nasrallah was a bad guy, but it is frustrating that the Israelis are doing this without consulting us and then ask that we clean up when it comes to deterring Iran, an anonymous U.S. official told the news site Axios on Sunday. And yet they did that. They obediently, they were furious, and I'm sure they were. They were furious, but at the end of the day, what did they do? They went out and issued another threat against Iran. Don't you dare. Don't you dare get involved. Don't you dare hit back. It's like all your dudes are getting their asses kicked, and don't you dare fight back. Don't you dare. We can see. And again, what are we? This is supposed to be some government by the people, for the people, and I don't see what we're getting out of it. Who is for this? I mean anybody. I'm talking anybody residing in the United States of America right now. I don't care what community you're picked. If you're a conservative white man living in rural America, what are you getting out of this? If you are black and living in the hood in a major U.S. American city, what are you getting out of this? If you're an Indian living on the reservation, and what are you getting out of this? What are you getting? If you're a leftist living in New York City, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and what the hell are you getting out of this? You know, what is anybody residing in the territorial boundaries of what is referred to as the United States of America? Can somebody say, who is it that's getting something out of it? I don't know. Yeah, I can't. I don't see any significant segment of the American population is out there saying this is great. Where are the people in the streets celebrating, going, yes, go Israel? Why? They're not there because nobody is getting anything out of this. Who supports this in America? Who's getting something out of this in America? I mean, I'm sure there's a certain segment of the American Jewish population that supports it in the sense that you support your kin, your racial kin, just as a matter, you know, of tribal instinct. But I think even amongst them, there's some of them scratching their head going, this may be a little over the top. And again, what are they getting out of it? I don't think there's a huge segment of American Jews that are like, boy, if our Israeli kinsmen can wipe out Lebanon and the Gaza Strip, we're totally packing up and moving to Israel. I don't think there is. I don't think there's a significant portion of them that plan to do that. And yet, they're doing it anyway. Let's get on back to the story. Let's see here. According to Axios sources, Gallant asked Austin to issue a public statement to deter Iran from launching a retaliatory strike against Israel following Najla's death. And that's what he did. Obediently. Obediently, he did that thing. What I'm trying to speak to here is the power dynamic. You read this and analyze the power dynamic. Who's in control here? When you read this, what's your impression as to which party here is in control? You have the one party that's obediently providing the money, weapons, bombs, everything else to the other party, and you would think that would make the other party subservient, and yet you have an opposite power dynamic. They're calling the shots. Lloyd Austin is mad. He's pounding the table. How dare you do this without giving us a heads up? I suspect part of that was because Nasrallah was one holding the reins in. You know, people sit around going, well, Hezbollah sure hadn't been doing that much, and I think there was a reason. You know, the Americans have probably had back channels communicating with this guy going, please don't escalate. We don't want this to widen into a further conflict. It doesn't benefit y'all. And then the Israelis just go and kill the guy. Just go blow up. Because, you know, the young guys, the young bucks, they've probably been jumping up and down wanting to let's just launch all the missiles at Israel. And the older guys are the ones going, no. We need to hold back. We need to hold back. There's one party here that is continually doing the escalation. And yet the Americans run around and wag their fingers and tell everybody else not to escalate. Whatever Austin told Gallant in private, he dutifully complied with the request. In a readout of another phone call with Gallant on Saturday, the Pentagon said that Austin, quote, stressed that the United States is determined to prevent Iran and Iran-backed partners and proxies from exploiting the situation or expanding the conflict. The secretary made it clear that the United States remains postured to protect U.S. forces and facilities in the region and committed to the defense of Israel, the readout continued. Why? Why is the U.S. committed to the defense of Israel? Why is that? What are we getting out of it? Obviously, these politicians are getting something out of it, but we're not. One would do well to remember stories like these and many others. Next time you see someone on social media and they use the term Zog and they get attacked for being an anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist, and you have to stop and say, wait a minute. Because apparently we're doing this out in the open now. Maybe 10 years ago, it was a little less in the open, but now today, it's out in the open. Then you start thinking back, like when Nancy Pelosi was at, I think it was at AIPAC, if I remember correctly. And she said something along the lines of, even if Washington, D.C. was nuked in a smoldering pile of ashes, the United States would still offer unconditional support for Israel. Which then again begs the question, why? Because when it comes to the American people, we're sure as hell not getting anything out of it. This ironclad support for Israel, what are we getting out of it? Nobody can seem to tell us why. Nobody can seem to tell us what it is. What are we getting out of it? It seems to me the only ironclad, real ironclad support is coming from the government, and namely these politicians. So again, one has to ask why. They're apparently, because nobody does anything for no reason. We, the American people, aren't getting a damn thing out of it. Like I said, I don't care what group of people you talk to, from white leftists in San Francisco to black Americans in the inner city to rural white conservative Americans to Indians on the reservation. You can't point to a single group that's getting anything out of it, but somebody is. And the ironclad support is not coming from the grassroots. It's not coming from the people. It's coming from these politicians and from the government. So apparently the answer here is that they are the ones that are getting something out of it. Remember recently when AIPAC posted up on their social media and boasted that virtually everybody they support gets into office? And perhaps in this, we find the answer as to who is getting something out of it. We'll wrap up on that note. I hope you enjoy your week. I'll be back tomorrow with Parish of the Patriots. No, I have not recorded yet. I've not done it yet. I have got to get this around and get this done. I've had a lot of stuff going on. But I do plan to be here tomorrow for you for the Parish of the Patriots show. Please check it out. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson will be here Wednesday, the Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Johnson will be back Thursday with his Daily Nationalist. Always a good geopolitical take. I have no idea what it's going to be about. Could be about this very subject. Who knows? It'll be good. You can count on that. And as always, I plan to be here Friday to wrap up your work week with the Daily Nationalist on Friday. So again, I hope you have a good week. As always, keep the faith. And we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, Talk Radio for the Nationalist Community.